This is the son of PCJ. On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is Media Network Plus.
Well, hello, everyone. It's very nice to have you with us for another edition of the program. Keith Parent here with you for the next 30 minutes. Paulette McCrory is away again this week, but she will be returning next week with a look at some of the headlines of things going on in the media. Mind you, at the beginning of today's show is going to be focusing on a big story that made news around the world, and that had to do with the major cyber attack that took place in South Korea this past week. South Korea is investigating the cyber attack after network outages at several major broadcasters and two commercial banks. Authorities say computer networks at the three TV stations and the two banks have been partially or entirely crippled. We have this story from Garish Sawalani.
Confusion at South Korea's YTN television station as the network's computers cease to function. System outages at two other networks and two commercial banks raised alarm bells across the country. While some of the systems have been restored, the South Korean military has raised its cyber attack warning level. The country's internal security agency says it hasn't found any evidence of an external attack after initial speculation pointed the finger at North Korea, which has been responsible for cyber attacks on its southern neighbor in the past. According to intelligence officials in Seoul, North Korea is believed to have a cyber warfare unit that employs around 3,000 staff. Wednesday's crash comes days after North Korea accused the South and the United States of being behind a persistent and intensive hacking assault that took a number of its official websites offline for nearly 2 days. The countries also responded to the presence of American B-52 bombers in the region, which are part of joint military drills between South Korea and the U.S.
North Korea is now closely watching the movement of the B-52 bombers. These hostile forces will never escape from our strong military if the strategic bomber is deployed on the peninsula again.
In response to the nuclear attack threats from North Korea, the United States is confirming that it's providing a nuclear umbrella to South Korea as part of its defense commitment on the Korean Peninsula.
The war of words doing little to quell tensions, which have been simmering since Pyongyang launched its third nuclear test last month.
Now, in that report that we just heard from Garish Sawalani, many people are wondering who is behind the attack. Now, it, of course, being South Korea, only one other place would come to mind, and that would be North Korea. But how do you investigate such a thing? Because this week, just before recording today's program, it came out that some of these cyber attacks came from an IP number that was based in China. But as many people who are internet savvy may know, it is very easy to disguise yourself by putting out a fake IP number or an IP number from a different country, which is one of the reasons why it makes it so difficult for security officials to really pinpoint the exact location. Dr. Nigel Fair is the director of the Center for Internet Safety. He speaks next to Liam Cochran.
Attribution for any cyber attack is incredibly difficult. It's one of the great reasons the criminal element out there, let alone nation states, are so successful is because they can obfuscate where they come from and hide behind the cloak of other machines.
So how much skill would have been needed to carry out this kind of attack that's just taken place in South Korea?
A high level of skill, but what we don't know from what they've taken down is how much, call it trophy data, there is that they've actually gained access to. Just because there's a website taken down in itself mightn't be that big a deal if the systems behind it are still in place and rigorous.
There have been some reports that that skulls came up as an image on some of the screens. Does that change the technique or the motive that might have been behind this attack?
When you're doing a cyber attack like this, particularly if it's from a nation state, they're not going to reveal their technical ability or capability in one go. They might just do a small attack like this, and a lot of it will be to look at how, in this case, South Korea responds, how long it takes them to get their systems back up in place for next time when they might want to do a similar attack, but maybe a little bit more advanced.
Now, North Korea is, I mean, more generally speaking, it's known as quite a backward country in terms of the cyber technology available to its general population. But what sort of capacity does it have within the military?
Well, it is a military state itself. It's got a huge kinetic military, you know, lots of people that are in the army as a proportion of its population, and it's certainly got a lot of technical savvy and ability within that capability.
We know of the links between South Korea and the US in a traditional military sense, but does America also help out with South Korea's cyber defense?
I would suggest they do very much so. There'd be a lot of information sharing that would go on between the various militaries in the region.
That was Dr. Nigel Fair, the director for the Center of Internet Safety at the University of Canberra, speaking with Liam Cochran. All right, now time for some strange noises. And as you know, we love strange noises like this. Well, for those who don't know what that is, of course, Morse code. What are they saying? Well, let's run another clip right now with voice. More or less says the same thing. Well, yes, that was a radio amateur calling CQ, or trying to make contact with somebody else out there. Now, I want to take a few moments to talk about amateur radio. Now, those who are hams out there, and I know there are many hams that are listening right now, I should tell you first, this language that I'm going to use is very simple. The reason I'm going to make it very simple, because I know there are people out there listening right now who absolutely know nothing about it, but maybe they were somewhat interested. Now, it is, of course, a very, very interesting hobby. And you can talk to people all around the world and use as little power as possible. In fact, a 100-watt light bulb is even more than some people will run most of the time. Now, for myself, my call sign is BV9CA. That's Bravo Victor 9 Charlie Alpha. I'm usually on Saturdays and Sundays, and I have been for the past couple of weeks after a long absence, because I just hadn't had the time, usually from around 6:45 UTC right until 9 or 10 hours UTC. I usually work the 10-meter band. Now, the reason being, the 10-meter band is an interesting part of the spectrum, because when it opens up, it really opens up. Over the past 2 weeks, I've been having conversations with people as far as Croatia, Ukraine, the Netherlands, Sweden, Russia, many from Japan, New Zealand, Australia, including one in Anchorage, Alaska, in the United States, running a maximum of 50 watts. So like I said, when 10 meters opens up, it is quite interesting. Now, there, of course, are a few things you need to learn. Regulations vary from country to country. Now, in most countries, they've done away with the test for Morse code. In some places, you still have to do it. Now, you don't have to be an absolute whiz to pass it, and it is quite easy. For myself, I've been, well, put it this way, if I was to send out a message in Morse code and type it out, it would take 3 hours before I can actually just finish saying hello. I'm quite slow on that, but there are people who are rather fast. So at least you just learn the basics. And then, of course, there's a lot of the talk. A lot of the talk and how to make contact with somebody. And there's a lot of codes as well. Now, it doesn't matter what band you're going to be in, but you should always check to see if a frequency is available. Many times, I have been calling CQ on a frequency, and all of a sudden, somebody will just start taking it over, calling it their own, and you tell them, well, the frequency's in use, and they just ignore you. So one of the things that I like to do is to see if the frequency is in use. And what I will usually say, which is the typical QSO, is this frequency in use? This is BV9CA Bravo Victor 9 Charlie Alpha. Repeat that a couple of times. Now, if the frequency is not in use, well, then you can go ahead and use it. What is the next step? Well, the next step, of course, is calling CQ. We heard two versions right there, Morse code and voice. I did try using Morse code a couple of times, but like I said, I'm so slow that by the time I finished sending it out, the person just lost interest. Have to work on my skills for that one. But what I, you know, what the standard thing, of course, you can hear is CQ, CQ, CQ from your call sign, and then you spell it out phonetically. Now, what is the phonetic alphabet? Because we had somebody that wrote in who really didn't know what this is. But the phonetic alphabet is actually quite useful. And it's even useful, for example, if you're talking to somebody over the phone and maybe their language is not English. Maybe their first language is not English and you're trying to say your name or spell your name. Keith, for example, to many people is an unusual name, depending on where they live, especially in parts of Asia, because the TH sound is just not pronounced. So if I do have to spell my name, I use the phonetic alphabet. So my name in the phonetic alphabet, instead of saying K-E-I-T-H, would be Kilo, Echo, India, Tango, Hotel. Very easy. Now, of course, there's a lot of spellings. Some people, for example, for J, which should be Juliet, some people will say Japan. Or A, which should be Alpha, some people will say America. But there is a standard one that is followed by most radio amateurs, which is also used by NATO, which is A for Alpha, B for Bravo, C for Charlie, D for Delta, E for Echo, F for Foxtrot, and so on and so on and so on. So once you learn that, then of course it's quite easy to make contact. Now, once you do make contact, if you go on the amateur bands, one thing you'll notice, there's some people that just want a QSL, or just say QSL, give you a 5-9, and then they're off, and then doing, you know, they're working somebody else. As Bob Zanotti put it, on our Facebook page just the other day, it's like air traffic controllers. You can't really have conversations. And you'll know, for example, these people right away. But this is only a certain percentage. There are people out there who are quite interesting. Now, over the past couple of weeks, from time to time, I've run into a guy by the name of Masa. He lives in Japan. And this guy is what I call a true chatterbox. He has an incredible rig. He's using more power than I can ever imagine, an antenna which is absolutely beautiful, equipment as well. And he has a very interesting background. Now, speaking of people with interesting backgrounds, last Saturday when I was calling CQ, I got a VK. A VK is somebody who is located in Australia. After we were talking for about 2 minutes, guess what I found out? He works for who else? No, he doesn't work for the ABC. He doesn't work for Radio Australia. Directly, that is. He works for Broadcast Australia, which is the company that manages the shortwave relays for Radio Australia and also the ABC. He's retired now, but we were just talking about things and he mentioned it and it was quite surprising. And then we sort of figured it out through the conversation. We know some joint people. And I talked to him a few times now. Very interesting guy. Very, very interesting guy. Now, I would suggest to anybody out there who is interested in becoming a radio ham or radio amateur, find out the information on the internet because it is rather fascinating. Now, some people would say, oh, it's a bunch of old people. They're all over 60 years old. Some are in God's waiting room. Well, yes, of course, there are people of that caliber that are doing it. Mind you, on the other hand, there are a lot of young people as well. Here in Taiwan, there are two groups of radio amateurs here in Taiwan. There's the ones that have been doing it for like 30, 40 years. But there's also a new group that are between the ages of 20 and 35 and maybe have only been doing it for about 5 years. In Japan as well, you're seeing a lot of young people get interested in the hobby. So I would suggest going on the internet, finding some information, and Once you get your license, once you're up and running, look out for me, BV9CA, Bravo Victor 9, Charlie Alpha, usually on Saturdays and Sundays between 6:45 UTC and 9 and 10 hours UTC. So I'm usually there for a little bit. Now, I know that right now, people heard my call sign. They know the times that I'm going to be on. So if you are going to be on this weekend, you know, tune around 10 meters, say between 28.42 megahertz and 28.48 megahertz. Tune around there. See if you come across me. And if you do hear BV9CA, Bravo Victor 9, Charlie Alpha, respond to me the email for the show. And if you're a radio amateur, do come in and say hello. You're listening to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. And now Bob Zanotti with some interesting information on how you can contact us anytime, anywhere.
Call the PCJ answer line at country code 44-20-3286-1399. That's country code 44-20-3286-1399. And leave your comments and questions. On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is PCJ Radio.
And by the way, I should mention that if you have or leave a recorded message for us, we may use it on the program. Now, Media Network Plus, of course, is not a music program, but from time to time we get strange little emails asking about songs, about radio, and stuff like that. And the other day we got one from David Lewis, who lives in Tasmania, Australia. And he was asking about a song that he heard many years ago, a big band song that was about radio, but he couldn't think of the singer, and he couldn't remember the name of the song, except for Somebody Listens to Radio. Well, as soon as I saw your email, David, I knew exactly what it was, and here it is.
Who listens to radio? That go where you go medium called radio. That's with you every night through the long commuter fight, and in the morning with your toast and mama lady. Oh, who listens to radio? No matter if it's summer, winter, spring or fall. Who listens to radio? Only 150 million. 150 million people. That's all.
And there was Sarah Vaughan with the Quincy Jones Orchestra and Who Listens to Radio, going out to David Lewis in Tasmania, Australia. You see, we found it. And I was surprised, actually, because sometimes we get people that will write us, they'll ask about something, and they don't give us any idea or clue. But the fact that you mentioned just a few words from the title, I figured it out right away. Now, last week on the program, our guest, who is here, Mr. Kim Andrew Elliott from The Voice of America, was talking about the VOA Radiogram program. And we ran this little message. And that was a little message or a radiogram that Kim Andrew Elliott put together for us that we ran in last week's show. The message says, I think, no, it actually does say, you can't, of course, it just sounds like a bunch of noise, but the message actually says, hello, Keith and PCJ listeners. If you are reading this, your decoding software is working. More digital text via analog shortwave broadcast will be transmitted on my new weekly program, VOA Radiogram. Information at http://voaradiogram.net. 73 from Kim Andrew Elliott. Well, that was the message. And we had quite a number of responses. A couple here that I want to mention right away is from Estonia, from Tarmo in Estonia. And he said that when he first tried to decode it, he put his laptop near his TV to receive the signal from WRN. But apparently, it was causing too much noise, so he didn't manage to get it done that time. But he did, at the end of it, figure out how to do it. Another listener here that decoded it word per word was from Sumaya, who lives in West Bengal, India. And he even sent along a screen capture of the software Fiji that he used to decode it. Now, staying on radiograms, PCJ and this program, we're going to be doing our own radiogram very soon. The first test of it is going to be on March 27th. On March 27th, 2013, at 0227 UTC, at 0227 UTC, on the frequency 9,955 kilohertz, that's 9,955 kilohertz, targeting listeners in the Caribbean, Latin America, and the southern part of the United States. We're also going to be broadcasting a short radiogram. What is it going to be? Well, I'm not going to tell you right now. but the only thing I will say is that this radiogram is a certain part of this program. It's a certain part of this program that we've put into text, and we're going to be broadcasting it for about 2 minutes. So let me tell you that information once again. That was the information on how to listen to that radiogram that we're going to broadcast March 27th, 2013. And I'll say it in voice because if you don't know how to decode it, what we just broadcast a second ago wouldn't make any sense. March 27th, 2013 at 0227 UTC, the frequency 9,955 kilohertz, and it's going to be about 2 minutes long. Before we broadcast the radiogram, I'm going to have a little message, and you will hear the PCJ interval signal before we broadcast the radiogram. Now, you need some software. To get information about the software that you can use, go to www.pcjmedia.com. That's www.pcjmedia.com. On the right part of the menu, where we have news articles that we publish and all kinds of other things, there's one that's entitled PCJ Radiogram Test March 27th, 2013. Click on that. In there, you will find a link. The link is www.w1hkj.com. That's www.whiskey1. HotelKiloJuliet.com. And there you will find all the information and all the software that you need to download. And the nice thing, because I know some people are wondering this, is it available for Mac? And yes, it is, because I'm running it on my Mac at home. So you can get it for PC, for Mac, and for Linux. The website, again, for the software is www.whiskey1hotelkilojuliet.com.
You can hear PCJ Radio while on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is a free news, talk, and entertainment mobile app available for your smartphone. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher from the App Store. Then, during registration, hit the promo code box and enter PCJ to get automatically entered to win $100. For more information, go to www.pcjmedia.com and click on the Stitcher logo on the right menu. PCJ Radio on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio.
Now let's turn to propagation and what we can expect over the next 7 days. Here's our propagation editor, Dan Hensley.
Here's propagation for the week from March 23rd to March 29th, 2013. A 10.7 centimeter flux of 100 on March 23rd. On March 24th, a 10.7 centimeter flux of 95. March 25th to 27th, it'll be 90. March 28th, 95, March 29th, spiking at 100. The A index will be 5 from March 23rd to March 27th. March 28th, the A index will spike at 18, still high on March 29th at 10. The KP index will be 2 from March 23rd to March 27th, spiking at 4 on March 28th, down to 3 on March 29th. The coronal mass ejection predicted last week did, in fact, happen. During the early hours of March 17th, a geomagnetic storm took place with a KP equaling 6. Even though the storm is subsiding now, we are not done with solar winds brushing up against our planet's magnetic field. March 19th and 20th should have brought us a solar wind impact with less strength than the CME of St. Paddy's Day, but strong enough to give off a show of lights in the Arctic Circle. This event will have been a result of a large coronal hole in the sun's southwest quadrant. All of the sunspots mentioned last week are passing out of view, away from an Earth-facing direction. One sunspot remains in view, however, and that is sunspot 1700. Any flares we get from the sun this week will be a result of AR1698, which is a bit noisy at this time as it crackles with C-class flares. March 28th and 29th will be our worst day for propagation as the A index rises to 18 and drops to 10 the day afterwards, indicating a possible major solar event. Back to you, Keith.
All right, then. Thank you very much, Dan Hensley, for this week's propagation forecast. If you wish to contact us and let us know what you think of the program or have any questions, suggestions, or ideas, our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. mnp@pcjmedia.com or mikenovemberpapa@pcjmedia.com. I'm wondering if anybody right now is going to type in Mike November Papa. Probably somebody will. There's always one. There always is one. If you also wish to listen to this program again or past editions, go to our website, www.pcjmedia.com/media network plus, all one word. Once again, www.pcjmedia.com/media network plus, all one word. And while you're at our website, you can get the information on the radiogram that I told you about. That we're going to be broadcasting on March 27th. That's next week. So do go and check it out. So on behalf of, again, vacationing Paulette Macquarie, I wonder where she's this week. Probably sampling more wine again. And Dan Hensley, this is Keith Pellow wishing you well. Hope you can join us again in 7 days' time for another program. 73s to you all, and 88s to the ladies.